the Leadership Institute leading leadership series. And let me start sharing my screen. There we go. And thank you. This is the second in our annual, our second year of really focusing on developing leadership skills that was instituted by the Leadership Institute. You see those folks listed here who have been really guiding this series for last year in the development of this series. And then this year, as we think about how to reshape and redesign the Leadership Institute series that we have here. The intent behind this, as we begin today and we have additional conversations and discussions over the coming months, the intent is really to help you as individual leaders hone in on your leadership skills, for us to think about and for you to think about what leadership means and what are the qualities that I bring to the leadership conversations, which will in turn help you in your leadership role within APS. Really bring clarity and definition to what your group is doing, what your group is committed to accomplishing within the larger organization. So there's that organizational leadership dynamic, which helps APS deliver even more significant impact than it has even in the past. And it helps you as an individual grow in your leadership skills. And hopefully some of these discussions that we have, some of these observations, the self-reflections that you have, help not only in your leadership role with APS, but in the institutions and the companies in your workplace, help you think about what your unique leadership skills are and how you can lead people in different kinds of organizations. So our first discussion today is really focused on personal leadership. It's focused on us as individuals and the roles that we play within this type of organization, but those individual leadership qualities. Our second series of conversations are going to bring different kinds of groups together within the organization. We have different unique kinds of groups that come together to deliver programs, to have expertise, the subject matter committees, some that are externally focused, some that are internally focused within the organization, some that help individual members in their career pathways and career trajectories. And so we want to bring those kinds of groups together to talk about intersections and talk about build connections to the strategic direction of the organization. So that'll be the second series of discussions. And then we have another discussion that's really focused on leading diverse and inclusive groups and really focusing on how do we bring input and insights from those who perhaps aren't part of our conversations and discussions. And what does it mean to bring diverse perspectives together, and who's included and who's excluded, and what are those barriers? So that will be our third conversation in these this series. So today's session, as I said, it's focused on three critical components. The first is what leadership is and what informs your individual leadership. And the second is to understand this unique context of a professional society and what it means to lead within this unique construct of a voluntary, purpose-driven, not-for-profit organization. Then we'll dig into leading teams and some of the connected characteristics between what leadership characteristics are and what it means to lead our teams. We're going to all present some background information that will allow you to meet with some of your colleagues and have you go into breakout conversations and have some discussion. We'll do that randomly this time so that you're able to meet some of the other folks who are beginning to or in the middle of leading or different parts of the organization right now. So we'll start with those six competencies that exemplary leaders share. This is from a lot of research that has been done, and we chose Warren Bennis because it's a good consolidation of description of these common competencies that exemplary leaders share. There, when you look at leadership research and you look at different descriptions, they're all very similar, but they really fit within these six competencies. They first and foremost create a sense of common purpose, a vision. what is it that we're willing to, or what is it that we're committed to accomplishing? We know that anyone who wants to be part of an organization, part of a team, part of a voluntary team in particular, really wants to work on things that deliver high impact. They want to have, and they want to be working on things that are focused, that are compelling, but that common sense of purpose, that vision is foundational. From that, you're able then to engage and motivate others, both by the purpose that you have, your vision, but also thinking about where their energy is and thinking about what they bring to the table to energize and to bring people into a space where they're willing to spend time and energy working on something that really matters to them and that matters to the organization and the society at large. That third characteristic is to make sure that you build an adaptive and agile social structure, that you think about the variables and how people come together and what their wants and needs and expectations are, so that you have a connectedness, but also understand those variables and how you build a structure that brings people in and engages people and doesn't just tell them what one person thinks they should do, but adapts to some of those critical variables in time and place and expectations and talents and skills and expertise and attributes, and see how all of those pieces fit together. They also build that and generate that culture of trust, that culture of candor, that ability to self-reflect and to allow people to be open and authentic, absolutely essential to really delivering impact at high levels. Next competency is to develop leaders, to think about who's next, to think about how to elevate, to think about the tools and resources that you're bringing as a leader to help others who might follow you, either in your group within APS or in any other kind of an institution. It's not, leadership is not ours to own. It's ours to share and ours to develop with others. And ultimately, leaders, as leaders, we want to get something done. We want to deliver impact. We want to have an outcome. We want tomorrow to be different than yesterday in a dramatic way. That quote at the bottom is impactful in how it captures and consolidates all of those thoughts, that unperishable characteristic that's the foundation of all leadership is character. It's the connection between those who are our leaders, those who are led, and the organization, connecting all of those parts and really, really understanding how all of these fit together. One of the most important questions that's builds on those characteristics is to be able as a leader to authentically ask the question why. Leaders today and always that are successful, then that are effective leaders, take that time to really understand rather than tell. They understate, they try to understand others' perceptions. They understand why people make assumptions the way they do, why people think the way they do, why people engage the way they do, why they have perhaps different perspectives than us. And as leaders, it's important for us to ask the why questions and then to do something with that, to build that into how we lead people together, how we build connections, how we build that social structure that's adaptable, how we connect with the common vision that folks have, how we build that culture of trust and candor. But foundational to all of this as leaders, and too often leaders don't spend enough time taking that step back and pausing and asking why someone is doing something the way that they did. Why does someone have a different perspective than me? What's their experience that's different than mine? What can I learn from that? And how can I use that to build a stronger bond, to bring different perspectives together as an entity, as an organization? There are four dimensions of four types of leading that commonly take place in organizations such as this, and frankly, in any kind of an organization. And that first dimension is to lead strategically. There are competencies that connect back to those four competencies that we just, those six dimensions that we talked about. The external awareness, the leading strategically, requires us to think about what's happening not within the organization, not within the committee, but externally. What's impacting us? What's happening? What are the trends that are affecting us as an organization. It requires us to really connect to that longer term vision, not thinking about the tactics that we need to engage in right now, but continually connecting those to the larger impact, to the longer term vision that we want to accomplish as an organization. When we lead people, there are a lot of those interpersonal dynamics. This is where culture becomes such an important dynamic. It helps us set that context ahead of time that allows us to manage conflict, to bring in different kinds of perspectives, to hold each other accountable in a way that's not punitive but constructive, and requires us to think about how we communicate and what we communicate and what expectations are within the organization that we have. When we lead change, we want to be creative. We want to think about innovation and flexibility. We really want to think about, again, the why things are happening or not happening. When we're leading change, when we're trying to think about delivering higher impact, about doing something different that learns on our experience from the past, it really requires us to think of, again, coming back to the why. It requires us to ask why. Why did something happen the way we had anticipated and was successful? What could we build on? Why did something not work? And what did we learn from that? What did we try 10 years ago that we might want to come back and try again? And what did we learn? What are the variables that are different now that we might want to pay attention to? It really requires us to reflect and think about what's happening around us and how things are connected so that we can take appropriate risk, so that we can take the prudent kind of risk that really starts to deliver a different kind of outcome than we had in the past. And when we lead collaboratively, it's our job as leaders to build connections, to build coalitions, to think about who else can help us deliver the kind of outcomes that we had expected. How can we increase or improve our influence? How can we increase our capacity by working with others, not just within the entity that we're leading, but outside of the entity that we're leading to? So we put all these together for you to take a look at and think about, and think about the strengths that you bring to leadership and what your individual leadership characteristics are. Before, and I think last week, we sent out some PDFs with some self-assessment components to that for some self-reflection. Those are helpful for us to be authentic leaders, to create that culture of candor, which allows us to think about who we are and what our leadership skills are, and connect with the outline that I just laid out for you, the competencies and the different dimensions of leadership, and where I fit in, where each of you fit in, and what your strengths are in those different areas. So it's always good to take some time to use those tools as self-reflection for us to think about, what are my skills? What can I build on? What should I focus on? What can I pay attention to? And also a bit of a gap analysis as leaders. When we develop leaders and we think about how to develop an agile structure, one of the most important components of that is for us to think about what we bring to the table, what our unique skills are, and what those additional skills are that others have that can help fill in some of those gaps, perhaps, or those things that I may not have at quite as high a level. So really important part of this process and of these conversations is a bit of self-reflection. Each of us come with different experiences of leadership. We just referenced the self-reflection that you had, but also we come with different places that build a mental model of leadership. Perhaps some of us have been leaders in academic institutions during our time in school. Perhaps some of us have leadership experiences in communities. Perhaps some of us have different kinds of ways that we've led or been in charge of things, whatever that might be. All of those experiences inform our mental model of leadership. I've had the opportunity to be part of a lot of different organizations and to really think about and to dig into leadership in many different ways, including when my wife and I were co-presidents of our local elementary school PTA. and had to build each other's skills. And we had some really interesting executive committee meetings about some things related to our skill. But there were some really fascinating dynamics that each of us reflected on. My having been leader in other spaces and my wife being a leader in an academic institution and us coming together. And we learned a lot from that. We learned a lot about collaborative leadership and thinking about how we build others into that leadership model too. That's just one example of many of the kinds of things that are perhaps strange in how we think about those, but can really inform our mental model of leadership. So think about what your mental model is, and perhaps describe that to others who we're going to break out into conversations with. And then think about where there may be differences between the sources of your mental models individually and also with those who you may share some of your experiences with, and think about what the implications of those differences are for your leadership. So a chance for you to self-reflect and meet some others in who are on with us today, and also think about that mental model and what we bring to leadership. So we're going to have you break out now into breakout groups for about 15 minutes and have a conversation. Describe your mental model. Describe what you bring to leadership in the organization. You'll also perhaps introduce yourself to folks who you may not have met before. So give a little bit of your background in doing this and talk about which committee or which group you are part of within APS. We'll dig a little bit deeper into that into the next conversations. But for the next 15 minutes, think about your mental model and what leadership qualities you bring and what you might want to work on. Now is the time when we beam up. Conversation. And it really focuses on this unique organism, this unique thing called a society, which is different than any kind of organization. But we know, regardless of whether you're a not-for-profit, voluntary, purpose-driven organization like the society, or you're an university, or you're a corporation, or you're any kind of an entity at all, we know that successful leadership really builds on these four components. It delivers clarity and consensus on what constitutes success, which when we think about how what that success looks like, we know we realize we need to have partnerships and we need to think about who we work with, and we need to think about what their unique roles are and what our unique roles are. And so building confidence in the competence of those we work with, so we don't think we have to do things all ourselves, and so that we can accelerate progress, also requires us to have clarity and roles and responsibilities. And it requires us to use that foundation of knowledge, that thinking about what is and what could be, and bringing insights outside of our own into any kinds of decision making, any direction setting within the organization. A good component for you to always come back to as you go on your leadership journey. This unique thing we call the society that APS is unique among any kind of organizations. It's a group of people who voluntarily come together to solve common problems, meet common needs, and accomplish common goals. It's different because the same group of people in this voluntary, purpose-driven, not-for-profit organization are the owners, the customers, and the workforce of the organization. Decisions are made in these kinds of organizations by a process and not a hierarchy or a person. It means that the way we interact and intersect is different than in any other kind of organization. We don't necessarily follow orders, as it were, but we think about inputs and insights. We think about what our unique position is within the organization, what we are brought together to accomplish that no one else can. Because of this unique nature, where we fit into the processes of the organization in the decision-making and the delivering and the executing on high-level programs and services also. But we have these kinds of organizations because they have very distinct, clear competitive advantages from others. The aggregate intellectual capital of their membership, as exemplified through the subject matter committees that we have. There's unique expertise there that doesn't exist anywhere else because of the people that you bring together. That energy of communities with a common purpose that's not focused on one individual, one entity, one organization, one university, one company. There's a purpose that transcends them all, that really develops the ability to deliver on impact that no one else can. The voluntary institutions have a credibility that is second to none when we think about external advocacy, when we think about internal validation and objectivity. Really important for us to think about, and the ability to have impact far beyond what any of us could individually, the places that we come from, to. These are important advantages for us to keep thinking about as leaders, and where do we fit into those? What advantages do we bring? Does our committee bring? Does the group that we lead bring into this kind of organization? We all know that we're here for a reason. We become part of these organizations, and with any kind of organization, there are really three components that are critical, that build that value proposition. The first one is that commitment to working on things that are of high value, that require coherent effort over time. Not things that are good because we can do them, but things that will make tomorrow dramatically different in a positive way, that we should spend our time on, that we should do because no one else can. Really important for us to think as we're leading a committee, as we're given a charge, as we're connecting to the strategic plan, what is it that we are uniquely positioned to deliver that no one else can? What is that thing that's hard to do, that will take years to do? Not what program should we do, but what is it that we can really deliver that's different? From that, we can start to deliver that content, that knowledge, that expertise, the important things that consolidate the knowledge base, that consolidate the expertise that's on the committee, that think about those things that really help all of us do our work better, to deliver on science, on research better, to collaborate in different ways on research, content that people can't get anywhere else because of who we are and how we came together. And then that community, that shared experience. We want to have fun. We want to push each other. We want to engage and have a collaboration and a camaraderie around each other. It was so exciting in Pittsburgh, for those of you who were able to be there, and to see the energy from those who were there, that community coming back together and really thinking about high purpose and what can we do and what should we do and what are we all doing right now that's different. Really, really exciting to build on. These three parts of the triangle are extremely important for the entire organization, but also for each of our individual groups within the organization to think about, what are we delivering? What's the commitment that we're delivering on? What's the content that's unique that no one else can deliver, that we are uniquely positioned to consolidate, to capture? And then how are we really embodying and bringing that community aspect together? Always think of these three things as you think about what we're working on. Do they deliver high impact? Is it critical content? Is this an enjoyable experience? Is this the kind of community that is important to us? We also know that there are unique roles within the organization, and the council has a role in setting the direction of the organization. That's why they're put into that leadership position. One of the important responsibilities that the council has is to make sure the resources are there to execute on that direction. Those critical resources, top of the list are you. The effective and efficient use and engagement of volunteers in the organization, that intellectual capacity, that ability to deliver on things that are of high value. The staff has responsibilities. One of those key responsibilities is to partner with volunteers and think about how to effectively identify what each is uniquely positioned to deliver. Volunteers are typically uniquely positioned to deliver content. What's happening in science? What's happening in the external world? What's happening in the world of plants that's impacting our members? And staff is uniquely positioned to deliver on programs and services and products. It's the how things get done. Think of, if this makes it easier, think of volunteers, of members really owning what and why, and staff really owning how we get that done, how we accomplish that. That starts to help us think about our unique position in this partnership. but also builds on the unique roles that groups like yours, committees like yours, have in a voluntary organization. There are two common purposes among them. The first is that thought force, who bring that knowledge together, those perspectives that help us think about new programs and services, that help us think about what's happening, trends, what's driving change in the future that we need to pay attention to. What's the new and unique science, research, information that people are going to need in the future that really help us think about that we need to focus on in the space that we're in. And then the workforce, the folks who are uniquely positioned to deliver on products and services that are aligned with the strategic goals of the organization. One is more insight and foresight, and one is the workforce is a little more focused on executing particular things and executing very specific things that are within the strategic plan. And you know that within APS, the voluntary groups are, as I just mentioned, focus leadership and subject matter, content development, program and policy. You are unique among associations and societies also because of the number of people who are involved and engaged. That's both exciting and daunting because you have 1,300 individuals who are part of this volunteer structure. It means you can work on a whole bunch of little things, or you can work on a whole lot of things on a few things that deliver high impact. And for each of you in each of your groups, it's really important to think not about what you can do, but what you should do that delivers high impact. Because with that number of volunteers, you have the ability to really focus on something unique that delivers high impact for plant pathology in the future. Really important part of and unique to this organization that you can help deliver dramatic content that's different than anybody else. So that's the quick version. Now, I should tell you, too, that all of this material, the reason we sent it to you and we're going through this quickly, we're giving you the taster's version right now. This is material for you and thoughts for you to think about as you think about how to lead your committee, about how to lead the group that you are in charge of and where you fit into the overall organization. So we're going to have you break out for 10 or 12 minutes and have you talked about the group that you are leading or going to lead, and what are the unique attributes of that group? What's your unique role within the organization, and how does your group add to the APS member experience? So let's go back into the breakout group and think about what makes you unique in this organization, and how do you add to the APS member experience? Great conversations, great discussions and robust about our own leadership dynamics and then the unique role that our group plays in this. I want to dig into one other component, and there are some of the conversations led into some of these the attributes of effective of teams that I'll talk about now, and then we'll see what you can take from that into the next conversations as you learn from each other and get to know each other and get to know what the different groups are that you come from too. So we know that there are attributes that commonly define effective teams, and this comes from our research with organizations like APS, and it comes from a wide range of other kinds of research too. And we'll touch on each of these, and you'll hear some common themes here, and we'll think about some of those dynamics, and then you can think about the implications of these and what needs to change within your group. That first is to have that common purpose, that vision that's connected to the organizational direction. As you'll see here, with each of these attributes, there are some questions that you can ask. They're prompt questions for you to ask yourself and also ask for your committee to see if you are really effective in how you deliver things. First of all, does your committee have a clear charge? Is it connected to the direction of the organization? Is it helping us achieve the APS's core purpose, advancing the science of plant pathology? It better be. It should be, or else perhaps you shouldn't exist. Our core values. Do we live our core values? That's part of who we are as an organization. The core values of APS, we won't go through all of them now, but they're in your book and they are fantastic because they do characterize who you are and how you do things. Does the work of your group help the organization live those core values? One of those critical questions. How are we helping APS achieve its the vision that it's identified, that healthy plants are assuring a sustainable future? Is our work really helping move toward that aspiration of the organization? And which of the goals are we helping to accomplish? You see the three goals here. There are the related objectives. That this material is all available to you as leaders. Actually, it's available to anyone who's a member. But thinking about what are we uniquely positioned to deliver that's embodied in the strategic plan? Which goal are we connected to? Which objectives under those goals are we helping to accomplish as an organization? So the reflection is for you as a group to think about how you're connected to the strategic plan. What are the first things that you should do with any kind of group that you're leading? Accountability requires us to have some methods of evaluating progress toward the goals that we have, toward the purpose that we have as a committee. And thinking about those accelerators or barriers, what are we doing that's working? What isn't working? It's not did we do things that we can check off and did everybody do their assigned task? It's what are we doing? What progress are we making? What have we learned that is helping us achieve this? Are we learning that we are overextending folks on the committee? And so we're asking them to do too much because we haven't been able to accomplish anything, and we need to balance some things and be much more specific about the progress we're making and what we're asking people to do. Are we not expecting too much of each other because we're making more progress? Have we identified our core purpose as a committee or organization is perhaps smaller than it should be? Is it too focused on what we can do and not what we should do? Is it not impactful enough? So a lot of those questions that then help us then think about what we're doing and how we do things and how we can measure progress toward the goals that we've set. That also helps us think about how we evaluate the resources that we have, the staff support, the expectations that we have of each other as committee members too. And oftentimes we don't necessarily just sit down and ask these questions as leaders and with teams about the resource requirements and here's what we have, here's what I have as a committee member, here's what someone else has. This is a critical part of leadership too. Remember, just because you're a leader of a group doesn't mean that you need to do all of the work or should do all of the work. If you're the only one who's doing all of the work, you really have to ask yourself whether the committee is really a committee and whether it should continue to exist if you can't keep energy around a higher purpose that people are committed to. Again, what are those good self-reflection questions too? The resources, one of the groups was talking about, and as I was eavesdropping, the change in committee interaction and engagement since we've gone virtual. And there are both advantages and disadvantages to that. But it's one of those, again, going back to the assessment, it's an important thing to assess. And it's an important thing to think about the support and resources that are necessary. When we meet over Zoom, conversations are typically much more tactical rather than strategic. And it means that every time we get together, we should have a clear purpose as to why we're engaging with each other. If we need to engage monthly, if we need to engage every week, if we're coming up against something that we have identified as a deadline, those kinds of discussions are more important now than ever, particularly because we are meeting virtually and in different kinds of ways and settings. A lot of this is reflecting on the opportunities to engage in honest self-evaluation and honest evaluation of what the group is doing and self-reflection. Notice that first question is whether you as a leader are setting a model of self-reflection. by doing that, you develop that culture of candor, that trust that says that says perhaps this is what I'm observing about myself, and being open and honest about that. Do you give your team the space to reflect on what they're doing, what they've learned, their interactions? That self-reflection, again, it's not in any kind of space. Sometimes it's assumed that it's a punitive conversation, or it's a conversation that's focused on failure, or I didn't do something. You want to, as a leader, start with your own self-reflection so that you create this space that we can be open about what we've learned, what we're doing, what's working, what are barriers, what are accelerators, what are advantages and disadvantages, so that we can think about that and engage the team together, think about the strengths that we bring and how we can build on those to deliver higher outcomes. Requires us to communicate with clarity, not more words, but fewer, deliberate intent, thinking about the kind of interaction, thinking about the method of delivery, the method of communication that's most effective. Always a challenge in voluntary organizations because Zoom, Teams, WebEx, those are just one example of different platforms that we use. We use different email platforms. Some of us use Twitter. Some of us use WeChat. We all use different kinds of things. Communication in any kind of organization requires us to create some norms, some expectations about what communication looks like. What's our method of communication? How frequently will we do? How will we communicate? What topics will we, or what subjects will we communicate on with more urgency if they come up? So you create expectations about what people can expect from you. It doesn't mean that you continue to put things and throw things at people and send things all the time. It means that you set some parameters up front. Can't underestimate, as you all know, that we need to thoughtfully and honestly value and appreciate what people are doing, not with empty compliments and plaques, but really think about the impact that the time and energy that folks are spending is having. This is really connected to why people want to be engaged in organizations and voluntary organizations and committees like yours. It's because they want to deliver something that has impact. They want to make a difference. They want to make a difference for themselves and others in the space. They want to demonstrate value. And so that appreciation of how their work is leading to something that we couldn't have done before, that value that they're really showing and demonstrating is priceless. It's absolutely priceless, and a great way to motivate future action too. And then obviously collaboration, how all of us should think about the unique role that we play as individuals and how we collaborate. As you well know, competition within a team like this and a voluntary organization is not an effective strategy. Identifying the unique role that each individual plays, building on that, and thinking about how we collaborate and build those teams together is absolutely foundational to an effective team and how we promote that kind of collaboration. The motivators behind this, as I've talked about, are really these three things, the things that really do earn engagement from volunteers: working on things that matter, demonstrating that the work they're doing is making a positive difference, and making that enjoyable experience, something that they want to be part of as individuals in a voluntary organization. We've captured a lot of these components and helped design perhaps the first discussion that you have with your committee or volunteer groups, and some questions that we find helpful, a template that we find helpful that starts to encompass a lot of what we just talked about, those reflections that were built in each of those slides with each of those areas to build effective teams. So we'd like you to break out into your groups again and think about looking back at and thinking about those concepts we just touched on. Think about what you're doing well right now and what's working, and think about those things that you might be able to develop a little bit more, and observe if there are any kind of resources that you might think might be maybe helpful. And if there's time at the end, or if you want to stay a little bit longer, we can we can have a bit of a summary conversation about what you've learned. We would appreciate if someone from each of the groups, if there are notes or questions or things that you might find helpful resources that APS could provide, if you could write those down and either put them in the chat or send them to Linda or myself. You have our emails from the invite, but if there's time, we can touch on those. So a good chance for you to reflect on what's working and of those attributes of effective teams, what are those things that we perhaps could build on and those strengths that we could develop as leaders. Welcome back from some great conversations that were talking about what's working and what some of your groups and committees have tried and perhaps questions about things too. We were scheduled for 90 minutes, and so this is a quick 90 minutes with some taster components, some tools for you as leaders to ask questions, think about what your leadership skills are individually. Think about how they connect with the organization itself, the unique roles within APS, and then some of those questions to ask about whether your team, whether your group is working as effectively as it can. One of the things to continue to ask yourself as a leader, if you're only getting a few people to come to a meeting, if you're having a hard time motivating, if you're thinking about how do we connect those people, keep asking why. Why is that happening? Why is it that it's hard to get people motivated? Why is it that people are energized by one thing and perhaps not another? What is it that I can learn from that as a leader that helps me focus the committee not on what it's always done, but that impact that it can have in the future, that high impact that it can have in the future? That is foundational to your role as a leader. To think about that, to think about those impact questions, to think about whether the parts are in place, and then to hand off a lot of that work to others. And if you're really delivering on something that is essential, that people and have that space that people want to be part of, and that they know it's going to help them professionally, it's going to help plant science and plant pathology as an entity and not just the society. If you're working on those things that are of high value, you will get people committed to the work that you're doing. You will get people energized and engaged. So if they're not, then your job as a leader is to ask why. And to be honest about that and say, hold on a second, it's because we've been doing the same thing all of the time. I'm doing the same thing that someone else did, and we're trying to put the same kind of programs together, and there just isn't energy around that. So what is it that we need to deliver? Taking that step back, that is your job as a leader. It's the most important job that you have leading your organization, asking why. So we're up against the bottom of the hour. We'll stay on for a little while if you want to ask questions, if you had some reflections that came out of your committee, some common themes that you'd like to talk about. But we know that we had it scheduled until the bottom of the hour. So if you need to leave, thank you for being part of this. Hopefully these tools that we've given you and the brief description of those tools will help you lead better, will help you lead more effectively as an individual and lead your teams in a more effective way too. There's another tool that I didn't get to, and it's the last page, and it's about finding your next leader. Another one of those critical jobs. There's some suggestions there about things to look for in your next leader and how to bring them on so that you're not just handing leadership off to the person who looks down at the wrong time during the meeting or isn't attending and you just hand it to them at a meeting. Another important part of your role. So with that, thoughts, comments, questions, observations that anyone might have from your discussions.
So, Nicole raised your hand first.
No, yeah. You go, Jeannie. You go, Jeannie. Jeannie. No, Jeannie goes Jeannie. First.
Jeannie, go ahead.
I was in group two with Femi, Jason, and Chenling, and we represent the bacteriology, virology, the collection and germplasms, and industry committees. And we were talking about the importance and how we need to really think through longevity of our initiatives, because there's initiatives that we have started, especially in the new virtual format that we're in, that's enabled certain, more engagement with people, and making sure that that's something that is continued in the future, whether that be the same initiatives or continued or new ones, like thinking through our longer term plans for the committee, especially discussing this with the next people on deck, right? The vice chair and whoever comes after that. Also trying to engage the full committee and making everybody in the committee feel included and involved in some way, and that they're also being reached out to, and that this committee is applicable to them, and doing involved in initiatives that are applicable to them. Looking inside the committee and outside for impact, like what we were talking about, the differences between like the industry committee compared to a lot of the subject matter committees, is that like the industry committee tends to use the committee more as recruitment and to inform others in APS that are outside the committee about industry, versus the other committees tend to be more inclusive, just with within our groups, exclude others that aren't part of that, and so it led to discussions on ways that our committees can subject matters can potentially go outside of that, or thinking outside of the committees, whether to draw members in, like Jace was talking about drawing people in, or like Chenling was talking about, trying to be more applicable as well to membership, like with industry, and trying to make it so that like connect members of industry, the Bayer and Corteva people, versus keeping everybody separate. So that's essentially what we discussed. I've missed a lot of things, but I felt like those were the big highlights for me, at least.
So much to dig in there too. Initiatives need to be connected to outcomes. When you think about why are you doing all of these things? Why are you doing all these programs? What will be different in the future if people participate, engage, if they are successful? What's the outcome? Keep thinking about that, because then you can connect that longer term. Here's what we expect to be different in 5 years if these things that we're working on are successful. This is the impact it's going to have. It's painful in voluntary organizations because you come in and out of it episodically, but really keep focused on what that outcome is. What's that impact? That why are we doing all this stuff? What difference is it going to make? Otherwise, we get caught up in doing the initiatives and the programs, and we think about if each individual program or activity or action, if each one of those is successful, it's usually measured against itself. And that's where organizations, that's where committees, that's where groups start to lose energy. Staying focused on that future, staying focused on what difference is this going to make? Why is this important? And then measuring against that. That starts to give you the message that you can send to others too. That if you participate in this, here's what you can expect. This is going to change your world. This is going to be dramatically. This is going to give you the information into the future that that you need, that you can't get anywhere else. So people need to be part of it. So those are all connected in the messaging and framing and energy. But staying focused on why are we doing this? What difference will this make for members? Who cares? And why should they care? And if they don't, are we doing the right thing? And being honest about that. We're going to dig more into this. I'm assuming that you're part of leadership in a subject matter committee. Is that correct?
I'm an immediate past chair of committee. Yeah.
Because we're bringing all of the subject matter leaders together to talk, because they have a unique role as communities. Less about developing programs and more about thinking about what's needed in the future, more content development than program delivery. which starts to change that value proposition dramatically. So we're going to talk
example
more about
of that.
That
is the Public Policy Board has created some of these, I think, what are they calling it? Fast response task, yeah. You know, task forces. So it's a specific item that the PPB wants, and then they're targeting or reaching out to certain subject matter or general policy committees, depending on where it falls. So that's a new initiative that APS is doing. So we're trying to get people away from just doing, I just want a session at the meeting.
Yeah. It's a different kind of value proposition. Yeah. So many other things that you touched on there that we've got a recording of that we'll build into the next conversations too. Yeah. Nicole?
Well, I just wanted to mention, while we're still online, I have to jump off in a minute, but we kind of spent our time talking about resources needed, of course. And I can write more, more of a description to you, Linda, because I think some of them are pressing. But a couple members of our group talked a little bit about how, you know, we really need to, if we're really truly embracing diversity and inclusivity, then in the sessions that we want to hold, you know, there should be all stages of career scientists. And this is not the first time I've heard it. This is not the first time I've been part of those conversations. And I fully agree with it. But sometimes the senior level, you know, scientist or the mid-career scientist might not be an APS member. A senior level scientist might have let their membership lapse. A couple of the members of our group were talking about, you know, we were just sort of discussing the awkwardness when they have to pay for their own hotel and travel accommodations and stuff like that. So I do think that kind of resource is something that, you know, we need to discuss kind of more, maybe see what other societies do and discuss that in more detail. Because I do think in the past, it's been a little easier somehow. I remember the days when we could pay for people, you know, to come in and support people coming in to give talks. And I remember thinking of when I was a grad student and postdoc going to meetings and thinking, oh my God, I want to go to this session because I've read this woman's papers in class, you know, and I know what the work that she's done, and, you know, I've discussed it and I based some of my work on it. So it's very exciting. And I think it's good to, you know, dig a little deeper into this, what seems to be an issue from what I heard in my group.
This is also where we're putting together a content task force. Mm-hmm. That's really going to focus on the first part of what you talked about, which is, this is a person who has incredible insight that is cutting edge, and here's the critical content that's necessary.
Yep.
Let's not jump right to that. Needs to be a program at the annual meeting, because that may not be the best place to deliver that. There may be a different place where that's more,
sure,
that may be better delivered to connect those dots. Because not everybody attends the annual meeting, unfortunately. Yep. Everybody should, but they don't. So that's where
it's true.
That's where you're positioned really uniquely to say, this is what's important. This is what's coming, especially with the subject matter committees.
Yep.
These are the trends. This is what's driving change. This is the information that's going to be needed to get everybody ready for what's coming in the next 5 years.
Yep.
Now let's think about what that is. Now let's get that to the right people to figure out, how do we get this out to our members? And so that's where what and why sits one place, and not focusing specifically on the how, on the success or failure of it being on one program during the meeting. That's where we need to break that apart a bit, because then we could actually deliver higher value. Then perhaps the annual meeting becomes that place where cutting edge innovation happens. And we've got other places to explain different kinds of research. So we start to think differently about the energy behind meetings.
Yep.
That's a whole lot of explanation behind some of the voodoo that we're going.
No, that's fine. COVID certainly changed the how, that's for sure. So, I mean, it's, we all see it in academia or wherever we work. It changed the way we run our classrooms. It changed the way we run our lab. It changed the how. for sure. So, yep, that's a good point. Something to think of. I am going to split, but I have some other things from my group that we talked about in terms of resources. Good. So I will put that together and send it to you. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jim.
Anyone else?
Linda, good to see
Thanks,
you guys.
Nicole. Good.